Hello, and welcome to the Extension Experience Podcast with your hosts, Josh Bouchong, Trent Malachik, and Dana Zook. Here you'll find insights into Oklahoma agriculture from West Area Specialists employed by Oklahoma State University Extension. Their perspectives come from assisting county educators and producers in the areas of agronomy, animal science, and economics. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome back to the Extension Experience Podcast. My name is Trent Malachik.
I'm Dana Zook.
And Josh Bouchong.
Today we're joined by Greg Highfill, Woods County educator and former area livestock specialist in the Northwest Area Office. Greg, growing up, the way to make money as a wheat farmer, in my opinion, was to run stalker calves and plant Jagger wheat. And, you know, I was born in 1990, so you have to forgive me. As a young pup, that's all I really remember. But I guess in some conversations I've overheard you having with Dana, that wasn't always the case. Maybe grazing wheat is something newer than I expected it to be. Would you like to go into that history and maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, way back, Craig.
Way back. Well, okay. When I was growing up in high school and junior high back in the 70s, it was a time when wheat pasture use was really coming into its own. It was very much expanding. Producers were using it, as you said, as a dual purpose crop for wheat and grain. You know, at that time, the 400 weight calves in October and the 7-8 weight calves in March could almost guarantee you a profit on wheat pasture. Now, there's no guarantees, but just a very consistent and relatively low risk price time when producers made a lot of money. And so, you know, when I came into the area job in 85, there was lots of wheat pasture usage and people bringing in more long haul cattle. And that's why the Stocker Conference was so popular, because we talked about cattle health and long haul cattle and different aspects of straightening out cattle. And that just was the key topic at the time, because wheat pasture and the amount of wheat pasture that we had very much in place. We grazed quite a bit of wheat, certainly compared to today, and was kind of at its peak time. So, you know, I look at that time as an important time in establishing wheat pasture as a grazing crop.
Why do you think, Greg, it's producers, there was more wheat pasture grazed then? Because that's my view right now. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I mean, why... And Trent, maybe jump in too, from an economic standpoint, is there just more risk now? Or
diversified revenue streams have always been important in Oklahoma since we've been typically producing wheat on wheat on wheat on wheat. Getting some other way to utilize that crop was very important. And, you know, for some people in other parts of the country that are maybe listening to this, may not understand what wheat pasture even is. So our production system in Oklahoma, if you're looking at wheat pasture, tends to be what, Josh? Plant September 1, September 10th, somewhere in there. Yeah. Planting our wheat, letting it get some forage on it. And then, Greg, maybe November time period, it's right. Got enough growth on it to put some 4 or 5 weight. Now, getting more into the 6 weight size animals as our weaning weights come up and kind of the availability of cattle locally goes that direction, but putting those cattle out there and grazing them and then pulling those off at first hollow stem or roughly around the last week of February, and then going ahead and producing grain with that crop. So we call that grazing grain. And that's just a really great way, or has been a great way, for producers in this area to diversify the revenue stream without really necessarily affecting yield that much. And Josh can talk some about that. And a lot of those yield reductions have to do with planting earlier in our planting dates when it comes to producing grain. But does that kind of answer your
question? Yeah, as far as the risk goes too, I think Greg and I talked about this earlier, is maybe the risk, it's just riskier to buy as many calves. It's not as consistent as far as pricing. You know, it's not consistently going to make you a lot of money, right, for the spring. And you said, Greg, way back, it was more consistent.
It was more consistent and certainly less total dollars. And so it is big money today. And not that it hasn't been back then too, but certainly today, just really big money. Something that was fairly prominent when I, again, 85 to 90, 95, when I was starting here at the area job, there was quite a bit more contract grazing. Companies that would contract with producers to graze their wheat, and the producers didn't have to be cattlemen.
Okay.
And so just really quite a bit of that went on, and it created industries. Again, we had a commercial receiving lot conference back in those days because, you know, there were people that got in cattle, they grazed them for a company on someone else's leased ground, and then ship those cattle, you know, to a feed yard, usually on some kind of contract basis. So, you know, we were doing a lot of work back then that included, you know, less risk management because they didn't have to own the cattle. They were paid on a cost of gain basis. And so they just saw that as a revenue stream trend that was fairly consistent and low risk. Again, that kind of peaked in the 90s, and you really don't see that much anymore at all.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean,
and I've gotten to that some too, as you were talking about less total dollars back then. But as I hear myself say that, I want to argue in my own mind because I say, well, it was less total dollars, but money has never been as cheap as it is right now. Like the interest rate is very low. And if you think about borrowing money back in the 80s, yeah, to purchase cattle.
Oh, true. Let's not forget about that. Yeah. Wonderful decade.
I don't know if the less total dollars argument is that great of one. So maybe we got to dig deeper as to why we see less wheat pasture maybe now on. And, you know, I've made some comments that maybe other crops are competing with acres. We have double crop soybeans, maybe sorghum, and that pushes our planting date back a little bit. We can't produce forage as easily if we're running double crops on those acres. But there's a lot of different things that go into that.
Yeah. Greg, looking back on some of the early projects OSU done, I know you had your fair share of the Marshall Research Station unit there west of Stillwater, half an hour. What were some of the early projects you were looking at there?
Well, when Dr. Horn started the unit in 1991, the first 3 years were really focused on supplementation and supplementation rates. And so Dr. Horn did a number of classic studies where we increased stocking rate by 30% by adding, you know, 0.75% of body weight of supplement to those cattle. So really showed very definitively with replicated plots that if we just fed those cattle, we really got about the same gain if we had adequate forage that we would get on regular wheat. But if we increased stocking rate and provided the supplement, we could get more total pounds of gain per acre, not necessarily per head, but per acre because of the dual impact of increased stocking rate and increased supplementation. And so OSU has provided educational programming on the results of those trials for years and again was an important studies that we've done and hopefully made producers money. That kind of expanded into 3 years after that of doing mineral work and finding optimum mineral packages that allowed wheat pasture cattle to do their best. And of course, intermingled with that was the use of ionophores and how they could be supplemented with the supplement and with the mineral to increase gain. So really worked on efficiency of the wheat pasture program and that was very important and really quality work. So you might be able to comment more on Dr. Carver's work at Marshall and the improvements we've made in forage production.
I agree. As the program shifted, definitely there's a big need to have some local genetics that were developed and we trademarked eventually that the grazing grain system for our dual purpose wheat varieties, something that can not only produce the forage, but also rebound from that grazing pressure and still make a grain crop. And so I always find it interesting looking at some of the stuff you did at Marshall, looking at the animal science components of everything. But as an agronomist, there's a lot of management practices that a farmer has to do, anything from planting date, planting rate, variety selection, fertility, so on and so forth, that has a big impact on what forage potential you have on that pasture. And that's another thing that you start looking at agronomically. A lot of our producers that they're used to someone coming up and offering them lease for that cost of gain lease and stuff like that. But they're growing for pasture, but a lot of times they end up just grain only, or they don't know what they're going to do at planting. So they start treating it like a dual purpose. They might plant early, put a lot of upfront fertilizer, stuff like that, or choose a variety that's excellent for that dual purpose system, but maybe not the top end for grain. And we even got guys that haven't done much grazing as of late and still have that mindset. And I know I've talked to other educators at our field days the last couple of years, and we start hammering them, well, if you're truly going to be grain only, we need to start looking at this differently. I know Dr. Edwards, when he did some trials looking at some of that stuff from Marshall, we saw that big difference in grain yield drop when we grazed. But 2/3 of that drop in grain yield potential was that planting date. And we also say that dual purpose, we're planting early September for Owen grain. We're pushing that back into mid-October. And just that month different in planting was a big difference on our grain yield potential, just because we don't need to waste all that biomass using that moisture in the fall. We don't need that many tillers. So it wasn't just the grazing pressure, but also those agronomics, planting date, planting rate. If we're just for grain only, that's going to be a lot different than we're upping that for getting more biomass in the fall for a dual purpose. Kind of goes on and on, but I've always found it interesting balancing that agronomics and those livestock components, animal science components.
Oh, I always have to think back to Roger Gribble and I fighting over, how much grazing decreased grain. I would always point to the years where when you grazed it, the grain yield increased. And he would always have to, of course, point to the years where it decreased it, 20-25%, something like that. So, yeah. That
I've
average
seen it as high as 60%.
I'm sure I can discredit that somehow, but that 8-10% that it probably is, we never landed on that. It always was one end or the other, but it is important.
Developed our system of looking at for first harvest in that came about because we're grazing too late. That was hitting us on yield, on grain.
Absolutely. And certainly, variety is so important to that. And we've got producers educated and so much more aware of what their potential is and how to get off it at the right time.
It's so not just pulling off on March 10th.
Exactly. Yeah. Nope. The date, we were way past date on pull dates. So,
man, it seemed like when I first got here, I was like, oh, yeah, they'll pull off wheat pasture in March. It seems like we think about it early February. I mean, right now, it seems quite a bit different.
Collecting that data for several years, and there's a lot of times early February, we're at that stage.
Some varieties are, absolutely.
So you would fail if you were grazed till March.
For crop insurance purposes, they have to set a date. They can't really make it field by field specific on a whole policy. So
I'm not going to be off topic here, but is some of that earlier hollow stem have to do with varieties that push forage production and grow fast right out of the gate, or is that a completely different topic that is causing that?
A lot of it's maturity. Some of it, we've made a big shift back in the day going from tall to semi-dwarfed. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that even on planting in the hot soils with the hypocotyl being shortened. But some of that is breeding for more forage. We get that elongation, but a lot of it's maturity and planting date. You see those early maturing varieties. We are starting to see some genetics that are more photo period sensitive. So day length is going to be another factor into that. It's not just soil temperature anymore. So there's a lot of factors that go into that. That's what makes it a field by field basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole wheat pasture conversation has been interesting as an economist, because I love the idea of diversifying revenues, but then it also can make people poor managers for grain as well, because over mm-hmm. the years, it got really easy to put all of our nitrogen out in anhydrous in August. And then as years have gone on, and Dr. Brian Arnell has really worked hard on the nutrient side of that, and we've kind of determined that maybe we only need 30 pounds of N up front to get the forage we need, and then we can kind of be a little bit better managers and reduce our total nitrogen applications by split applying N and things like that. So it's been a long process trying to learn exactly how to do this correctly.
So it's interesting, though, Greg, now that you were in the area office and then you went to the county. So do you feel that all those things that we kind of developed at OSU that were very wheat pasture focused, you feel like producers have really applied a lot of that stuff? Have they taken that and really used all, quite a bit of that information? It sounds like from our conversation we have, but it's probably a unique thing that you've been able to look at, is to see how the application goes back to the county and down to the ground level, really, of what Extension really wants to happen.
Absolutely. It's a great success story. And yes, you see it practiced every day. Producers are very adept, and they know how to use information to match their needs. And you do. You see it every day. I'm fortunate in Woods County. I've got a lot of younger producers that are my stocker operators. And it's interesting. They kind of apply that technology a little bit differently because it's kind of a standard now. And so they see it as the standard of how things should be done to begin with. And it does help them in their production practices. You know, the stocker deal is always fighting health. And it's just a battle that we have to fight and keep fighting. My producers are always looking for information and educational programming on, you know, new health ideas, ways that we can keep cattle healthier, get them healthier from wherever they've come from. And so it's just a challenge. But from a wheat production standpoint and a, you know, cattle supplementation standpoint, yes, a lot of what we've researched is certainly applied.
Yeah, I don't know if we've solved the health thing. I think from what we've seen, I mean, from what I've noticed in our industry, that's still a big question mark. And that's probably a really good area of focus, I think, going forward. We've kind of solved a lot of these other things, but that's still a big problem, I think.
Well, again, it's probably the limiting factor. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably why we don't see as many wheat pasture cattle in the country as we do. Just all producers tend to be more specialized. Our crop producers tend to be more specialized. They've become no-till producers, and that reduces forage production. Mm-hmm. They've doing double crop. That takes, you know, acreage away from forage, from wheat forage. So, you know, on the flip side of that, our wheat guys and the cattle guys are, you know, more intent on probably getting in more cattle and doing more with less. You know, you may see fewer cattle in the country, but that doesn't mean that the stocker industry isn't alive and well. So,
yeah, it just looks a little different, I think.
Yeah.
I think it looks a little different.
And you can't really buy cattle without hedging them anymore. And a lot of people do it, but you were speaking a little bit earlier to the economics of stocker cattle and how, you know, it used to be you could buy cattle in November and the price would only go up from there till March. And that is not what we experience anymore. And it seems like the last 3-4 years or so, we've actually seen prices plummet in that February to March timeframe, right where those cattle would be marketed for various reasons. And it has a lot to do with, you know, these world markets now that there's nothing that's just USA focused anymore. It can be something going on in all parts of the world that cause these markets to fluctuate. And we always have to drive home. At least every time I do a meeting in your county, I seem to talk about hedging and price risk management. And there's various ways you can do that. But it's something that people cannot forget.
Absolutely. Been around this 30 years, but I don't know that I've seen any more of a sensitive time than right now. We've got fewer producers handling bigger numbers of cattle that, you know, if you visit with the bankers and the credit people around the district, I hear more issues of people in trouble than, you know, I've heard in years. And so I think that absolutely has to go with the hedging and the risk management. And you know, again, that takes the risk out of it, but it also takes a little of the profit potential out of it. And through all that, we have to be diligent and take little steps. Absolutely. Hedging is key. And I don't know of a really hard, serious producer in my county that wouldn't be fully hedged. Yeah.
Now it kind of becomes the analogy of whether you're hitting for base hits or you're hitting for home runs. And I think our producers have to be a little bit more cautious right now and maybe lay a bunt down every once in a while and just try to get on base as opposed to trying to really hit that home run.
I think another unique aspect of wheat pasture in Southern Plains is we got that crop out there, 8-9 months. That's a long time to make decisions that far out. So we have a lot of decision making that goes throughout that time period. So a lot of times we're making those decisions come spring. Do we want to graze out? Do we want to pull off early, go for a good grain crop? What are the conditions looking like? What's the forecast on drought or rainy spring? So we make those decisions late. So we kind of allow those opportunities to be more fluid, I would think.
Which can be good and bad, you know, both ways. So that's a really good, I mean, where else do you find a crop that's in 9 months out of the year? That's totally different.
And it can become so many different things as well. Yeah. We didn't even talk about hay. You know, you can graze it till then and then also get a hay crop off of it or grain. You know, there's so many different ways to go there.
Absolutely. You know, I've got cattle guys that don't graze, that don't harvest a thing. They roll straight from graze out into crabgrass and then right back into wheat. So it's they'll get 11 months of grazing sometimes.
Yeah. And it's amazing how diverse agriculture in Oklahoma is. And as we bring in more educators, I'm sure we'll get even more types of crops and production systems across the state that we'll talk about. But Greg, we've really enjoyed having you on today and appreciate your time and talking about this topic. So the history of wheat pasture is something that I don't hear very often. So I think that's a really great topic to have. But we really enjoy the fact that you joined us today, and we hope to see you again soon.
We hope you've enjoyed what you've heard. If you would like to hear more or follow up on the discussed topics, please reach out to your local county extension agent. OSU has a presence in all 77 counties, with educators eager to assist you. Also, please consider checking the description for links to our social media pages and further information pertinent to the conversation. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.